everybody, Dave McKeown from Outfield Leadership here, and welcome to this podcast, Lead Like You Give a Damn, where I interview leaders and leadership experts who have cracked the code on leading with authenticity, purpose, and effectiveness. I'm delighted to kick off this series with Tom Singer. I had the privilege of meeting Tom last year, where he emceed a conference that I was at, and he really did improve the experience of the attendees as a result of that. But not only is Tom an MC, he's a leadership speaker, he's an author, and he's a host of the podcast Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do, where he interviews business leaders, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, and others who possess an extra dose of the entrepreneurial spirit. His podcast was listed on Inc.com as one of the 8 podcasts that entrepreneurs should listen to in 2018. Tom speaks and coaches on the paradox of potential, and he helps leaders close the gap between their potential and their results. And if you listen in, you'll hear that Tom and I had a great time talking about a number of things, really. First of all, how interruption management is causing us to lose productivity, and how regaining human connection is key to increasing our leadership effectiveness. We spend a bit of time talking about how people get stuck in the high middle, which is a term that Tom has coined, and how to get out of that. And we take a look at what to do when you realize that there is a gap between your potential and your results, and how to overcome that. So I hope you enjoy the show as much as we did. Feel free to leave me a comment or a question and share this with anybody who you think would find it useful. Let's get stuck right in.
Well, hey, Tom, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. I am delighted that you agreed to be part of this, Tom. As you know, this is the very first time I've had a guest on this show. And so that either means that we have absolutely no pressure on us, or we've got all of the pressure because everything else builds off of this. So I hope you're ready for that.
I'm ready. I feel the weight on my shoulders, but it's good.
It's good. I think that you're a strong man to have that weight on your shoulders. I know that you're quite heavily involved in the podcasting scene, and so quite a few of the folks listening may know who you are. But for those who don't, what do you do? What gets you up in the morning?
So my name is Tom Singer, and I'm a professional speaker and master of ceremonies. So I work kind of across industry lines at corporate meetings and at association meetings. And I've been doing that for 9 years. April 1st, 2009, I got laid off from a corporate marketing job, and I decided I would make a run at being a speaker and a trainer. And I'd done a little bit of that in my job, but it was a whole different world to take the leap and go out and do that. And now, 9 years later, it's what I've been doing full time, and I'm busy, and so I like it. It's probably the best job I've ever had. But I wake up every day and I have no clients, and I have to go out and sort of pitch myself into the world of meeting planners and others. And then on top of that, I host a podcast called Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do, where I get a chance to really sort of have like private conversations with some really interesting entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, business leaders who are doing really cool things. And it's like I've interviewed over 300 people now, and it's like having my own college course of entrepreneurship. So I love my podcast for what it does for me, but I really like what it does for other people too.
That's incredible. And so what came first for you, the emceeing, the speaking side of things, or the podcast?
Well, I mean, really, I am a speaker by career. I mean, that's what I do.
Right.
That's how I actually make my money. The podcast, while I don't get paid for it directly, I don't have any giant sponsorships and things like that. I do spin business off from it because I have a lot of loyal listeners who've listened. The podcast has been going on for over 3 years. I think I have 331 episodes, over 300 individual interviews. I have people who've listened to the show since the very beginning, and when they're – you know, their sales manager is talking about the upcoming meeting and he says, oh, we're going to bring in a speaker. They'll say, hey, I know this guy. And they don't necessarily know me. They listen to the show. So I would say I'm a speaker far before I'm a podcast host, but the podcast hosting is fun.
Gotcha. And now, we met last year at a conference where you were the MC, and it was the first time I'd been to a conference where somebody had brought in somebody from the outside. And, you know, it was an incredible experience. You did a great job of just bringing the group along and tying together sort of the themes of the conference. And when you started out 9-10 years ago doing that, you know, what gave you the idea to do that? Was there many people out there doing it at the time?
So I started off as a keynote speaker, and my topic,
right.
Think back 10 years ago, we had just gotten the smartphone. We had just gotten all this social media, LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook was all brand new, and all
right.
of the conferences you went to, everybody was talking about mobile and social media and digital, and my topic was, how do you get back to human conversation in a world of digital? So it was connecting with people in a social media crazy world. So it was a keynote about sort of back to basic skills of networking.
Mm.
And people warned me, oh, well, you can't do that because the world is changing. It's all about likes, links, shares, and follows. Nobody cares if you talk to anybody anymore. And I actually was sort of the contrarian who said it still matters that you sit down across the table from somebody and look them in the eye. And what happened was is I started changing it up in my speeches where halfway through I would say, let's use this conference as a human laboratory. So at the next break, here's some things you can do. Instead of being on your phone checking Facebook, you can actually put your phone in your pocket and talk to the person in the coffee line. And I did it through a series of stories, and it was funny, but it worked. And people would get really involved with meeting other people at the conference. So meeting planners and CEOs of companies were like, wait a minute, we have to have you next year because what you did
right.
was great, but we can't have the same keynote speaker. So I switched
right.
it up and said, I could be your MC, and instead of doing an hour keynote, I could take all that content and I can break it up into 5-minute chunks over the 3 days. And so I was probably 4 years into it when I started the Master of Ceremonies stuff, and now I do still mostly keynotes, but I probably MC about 10 gigs a year, and that's about the right number because they're a lot more intensive to be there for 4 days.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's a really prescient topic that you started talking about nearly a decade ago, and it's only becoming more and more prevalent as as technology is continuing to evolve.
In fact, Dave, now I ask audiences, now that we've had social media for 10 years, how many of you feel that you have more friends and more close business associates
right.
than you did a decade ago? And very few, some people do, but very few people raise their hand. So where I was told, oh, this topic won't work, now this topic is like really important. So I get booked more now than I did 10 years ago.
Yeah, and as somebody once said, constant change is here to stay, and you know that's only going to push further and further. You know, one of the things that I speak about in terms of becoming a leader of authenticity, purpose, and effectiveness is we've got to find a way to deal with interruption management. You know, you can get pinged by basically anybody through about 6 different mediums at any point. Do you see much in the sphere, in the field of leadership, and about how social media and technology is impacting that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the distraction levels that we have are unprecedented. Never before were people so interrupted constantly during their business day. I mean, you know, I can remember having a phone on my desk and I wasn't allowed to make personal calls on it. Well, if I couldn't make if I couldn't make a personal call and supposedly someone in corporate was monitoring who you were calling, if I couldn't make personal calls on my desk phone, that meant I didn't make any calls to my friends or anything all day because I didn't have that opportunity. Now people have 1, 2, and 3 devices on them everywhere they go. There's no way the boss can monitor what people are doing. So I think it's gotten worse, right? In my father's day, when he would go to a conference, he'd come back and he'd have messages like on a spindle, right? He'd have the little pink pieces of paper shoved on a nail. And some of the messages were 3 days old, but people didn't expect him to call back for 3 or 4 days because he was traveling. So now people expect you to respond within a half hour. And so I think it's worse. I think it's progressively over the decade that I've been studying this and talking about this and helping people with this, I think it's getting worse. And I think people are hungry to find ways to be able to manage those disruptions.
Mm. Do you think it's making us more productive or less productive?
Oh, it's totally making us less productive. I mean, you know, there's been studies out that talk about, you know, how much of the day is wasted and just keeps getting bigger and bigger. I mean, nobody ever worked, you know, 8 hours a day. You always talk to somebody at the water cooler. The problem
right.
is the water cooler is now in your pocket. Your phone is the water
right.
cooler.
And so what do we do about it all?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because everybody says, you know, when they're talking about maybe hiring me to come and talk to their company, they're like, oh, we have a lot of millennials. They won't like your message of human-to-human engagement. They all want to be on their phones. Totally not true. It's the younger generation who embraces what I'm saying, and they're looking for ways. So my nephew told me that when he goes out to dinner with his buddies, someone will call for like a phone stack. And I'm like, what's a phone stack? And he said, we all put our phones in the middle of the table at the restaurant. And if anybody, and they stack them. So it's a phone stack of phones. If anybody touches their phone before the bill arrives on the table, once the bill comes, they need it to do math on how to divide up the bill. But if anybody touches the bill, their phone before the bill is set down, they have to pay for dinner for everybody. And he said, you know, dinner for five guys with drinks, that could be a lot of money. So nobody touches their phone. So before he goes to dinner with his friends, he texts his girlfriend and says, I'm going to dinner, phone stack, you know, 2 hours. I'll be back to you in 2 hours. And he just lets people know he's not attainable. So it's the millennials who are looking for ways to make it so that you can, you know, actually connect. So, I think we have to take that into our own hands if we want to have success.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see the younger generations, you know, millennials and then Gen Z or whatever you want to call it coming up. You know, they're going to have to deal with a whole raft of other new technologies and potential for distraction. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether that pendulum will continue to swing back towards the craving of human interaction or whether it'll just blow us out of the water. And, you know, we'll, you know, at some point we'll just end up in a completely virtual reality world.
No, I don't think that will happen. I think at the end of the day, people are the same as they've always been. So my dad always used to say when people would say that people were different, my dad would say, no, they're not. Go read the Bible. If you pull out the Bible, which is stories from 2,000 years ago, you find stories about lust and greed and infidelity. You find stories about wars and famine, and you have countries that aren't getting along, and you have alliances, and you have stories of leaders that everybody adores, and you have stories about leaders that everybody can't stand. Does that sound familiar? It's the same stories that we have on the news today. So the stories play out. People are the same.
Uh-huh, yeah. And it's just about the tools and the technologies of the day and us adapting our similar patterns of behavior around those. Yeah, I think that's a pertinent point. So share with me about the podcast. What made you wake up one morning and say, hey, you know what? I'm enjoying the speaking, but, you know, I'd love to start a podcast.
So I used to be a pretty avid blogger. I'll be honest, I don't write nearly as much now as I used to because of the podcast. But I used to blog 5 days a week or thereabouts. And on Fridays, I got tired of just writing my own ideas. At the end of the day, I'm not famous. Who really cares about what I think? And I started doing a thing on Fridays called Cool Things My Friends Do. And every Friday I would just write about the coolest thing one of my friends was doing. It might be in business. Maybe they wrote a book. Maybe they were – one of my friends rented a motorcycle and was riding across country. Whatever it was, I would write about that. Oh, that sounds cool. And I'd write about it. Gave a little free PR to my friends. My blog was pretty well read. But at the same time, it was me not just having to talk about me. And at the same time, podcasting was becoming really popular. And somebody said, this is about 4 years ago, somebody said, you should really turn Cool Things My Friends Do into a podcast. But the more I thought about it, if I was to put this out in the podcast world, who cares what Tom Singer's friends do? So I changed it up a little bit and called it Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do, because most of my friends are business leaders or entrepreneurs or solopreneurs. And I started off just interviewing my friends, but now I interview people from big companies, small companies, people that I know, people that I don't know. So that's sort of how it got started. But also, I thought I was going to do 50 shows. And the idea was I would interview 50 really smart people, and I would get smarter just because I had that time with them. And now that I've done 300, I may never stop because I keep learning. And then I'm able to share that learning with, you know, an audience of, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 people per episode. So that's awesome.
Gotcha. That's great. And any particular overarching themes that you pick out from folks that are entrepreneurs, leadership lessons that you hear again and again and again?
Well, there's so many of them, but like a lot of it does come back to, you know, knowing the right people, you know, getting the right people on your team, whether that's employees or consultants or investors. It's your network. It's the brand that you build. And a lot of it is, a lot of people talk about how what they're doing now isn't what they set out to do. So they had to be willing to pivot because what they thought was going to be their big business, nobody bought it. And so they had to listen to the marketplace and change direction. So there's a lot of similar themes. There's a lot of people who just, you know, got fed up because their ladder was against the wrong wall. They were in corporate America, and they got stuck in what I call the high middle, which means they climbed up really well from the outside. You think, wow, look at Dave. He's doing great. But on the inside, they knew they could be doing more, and something in corporate America was holding them back. So they went and started a company. So there was a lot of themes along those lines.
Yeah, that is interesting. Did that concept of the high middle just come out as you were talking through with these folks on the podcast, or was that something that had, you know, come to you previous to that?
No, well, it came out through the time I've been doing the podcast. It came up about a little over maybe about 2 years ago. So part of it was from, you know, talking to people who all kind of had that same thing, that if you looked at them, they were successful, but they were stuck in the middle. And what I realized was that was my career. I had been stuck in the high middle. If you looked at me from the outside, you know, you'd think I climbed pretty far. And so, you know, you can't complain when you're doing well and you're up there in the high middle. You can't be like, yeah, but I'm not on the top. You know, I'm in the top 5%. I suck. Other people look at you like, oh, shut up.
Right.
But if you have a desire in you, you sort of want to go farther. And so what happened was I started researching this, and I was trying to write a play. And the play was, it was a one-man show. And the star of the one-man show was going to be my own childhood imaginary friend. I was one of those kids who had, like, a very active imagination, and I had an imaginary friend who was really plugged into my life. And the one-man show was going to be at 50 years old. He came back, and he was mad because I hadn't lived up to my potential. I had been stuck in the middle. And so I started doing research on this whole thing of how people get stuck and how people get unstuck, and then I came up with this whole set of criteria around potential. And while I never finished the one-man show, I now have a new keynote called The Paradox of Potential, and it's all about what happens in corporations and on teams and as an individual with the gap between the potential someone has, because lots of times we hire someone and we think, oh, Becky's got potential. 2 years later, we're firing Becky because she didn't do anything. Well, if you have potential, why didn't they do it? Well, potential doesn't equal results. So I've done a lot of research, talked to a lot of people about this gap. And what's holding people back from doing what they want to do? And it turns out there's a lot of things there. And so so this whole idea of me identifying myself in the high middle resonated with a whole lot of people, and that led into this whole thing about how do you get out of it? How do you get across the gap between potential and results?
So how do you get out of it? What are your options?
Well, I mean, there's too many to kind of go into here, but there's a lot of – first you got to identify what's holding you back, because if you feel stuck – it's for a different reason than me. I've had like 300 and something people take a survey that I've done, and I've interviewed about 10%, about 30 people. And when I ask what's holding you back, there's all kinds of reasons of what's holding you back. So the first thing you have to do is know, you know, what's holding you back. And on a team, when I go in and work with a company, if 10 people on the team are being held back by 10 different things, that's a different answer than if they all are being held back by one thing. So the first step, you got to figure out, you know, am I being held back? Is there a gap between my potential and the results? If there's a gap, if I believe it and I admit it, then why? And once you know why, the answers start to become very clear as to how do you get across the gap.
Right. And do you find that it's usually a cultural issue within the organization, or is it a team issue, or is it an individual issue, or is it a range across that gamut?
Well, it's all of the above. And again, there's no easy answer. And what I find when I talk to people who feel that they're on the wrong side of this potential gap, what they want to do is they want a shortcut. They want an easy answer. They want me to say, yes, it's because of this cultural issue, or yes, it's because, you know, you don't have the right training, or you don't have the right people on your team, or whatever. But the trick is you can't build a bridge across the gap. Because if you build a bridge, if you were even able to build a bridge all the way across to the answer, once you start taking actions and living your life and doing things and going across that gap, because there's no transporter, you don't get sent across. You have to cross it one way or the other. As you go across, the problem is that you're going to end up with new potential, because you're going to learn new things. You're going to meet new people. The market's going to change. Your company's going to change. The stock market could crash. It could go up. All kinds of things are going to change. So when you get to the end of the bridge, your potential's not there anymore. There's a gap. There's a new gap. So I tell everybody, don't build a bridge. There are no shortcuts. Build it in modules. So you want to build a scaffolding that goes across, and then you can walk across a scaffolding side to side. You can go up at an angle. You can go up a little bit. You can backtrack. And then when you get to the edge and your potential has shifted, you can add more scaffolding.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, obviously for you, when you found yourself in that position, the answer was, you know what, I got to get out of corporate America. I got to go start my own thing. You started the speaking career and the rest is history. That's obviously not the answer for everybody. Would you have a sort of a percentage breakdown that says, you know what, one in five people should probably go do that versus the other four in five need to figure out how to bridge that gap within their current situation? How does that play out?
You know, I don't know that we can put everything into a simple box of statistics. I think we like to, as human beings, we like to be able to say 5% of the people will be this. It's really up to everybody individually. The truth is not everybody should start their own business. Not everybody has the stomach for it. Not everybody has the husband or wife who's going to support that. Not everybody has the risk tolerance because, you know, I went out and started it. It didn't mean we didn't hemorrhage money for 3 years. I mean, we blew through everything we had and then some. So, you know, it took a while to get it established, and I'm still learning. I mean, I've been, you know, I mean, it's not like I'm making $1 million a year, but I've been successful based on basic corporate incomes, you know, for a long time, but I still have potential. There's still a gap between who I how to get there. So I have to reverse engineer it. I have to go out, and part of it is getting around people who are doing what you want to do. And the mistake we make is we look at the celebrities. We look at the people who are 10 steps up the ladder, and we want to be like them. We want to be, you know, in the world of celebrities and stuff, you know, whatever industry you're in, you know, pick whoever the most famous is, and people want to be like that man or that
woman. Right.
The problem is there's 10 steps between you. The world's going to change before you get up 7 steps. You can't do what they did 10 years ago to get to where they are now. It's different.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is surround yourself with people one rung up the ladder, maybe two. And reverse engineer what they did. What did they do last year that you can do now that'll get you to where they are next year? And I really think that surrounding yourselves with the right people is the key because, you know, I always tell people when they want to become a speaker, my first question to them is, how many speaker friends do you have? And when I say friends, I don't mean you liked them on Facebook. I mean, like if you're having a bad day and you call and say, I need to go get a beer and talk to somebody, they clear their schedule and show up at the bar. I mean, how many friends do you have? And sometimes, like, I'll be having coffee with somebody, and they're like, my friend, sister's cousin's dog walker. And they're like, I want to be a speaker. And so I'll ask them at sometime during the coffee at Starbucks, I'll say, how many speaker friends do you have? And I had somebody look at me and go, well, you? And I'm like, I've never met you before. I'm giving you free consulting because you're my friend's cousin. But we're not – this isn't a friendship. I'm talking about like people to hang out with. And if the answer is zero or one, my answer is go get new friends. Go get around people who are doing – if you want to own your own plumbing company, how many people do you know who own home services companies? They don't have to be plumbers, but maybe HVAC companies or lawn companies. Get around people who are doing that. Find out what it is they're doing that's working. And the only way you're going to – you can't read it in a book. You just got to find out because you're hanging out with them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I think it's a pertinent point that I do think that the evolution of the internet has essentially told us that we can do anything. We've got all of the tools at our disposal. And, you know, that is true. But you've got to learn from other people. You seldom a successful person goes out and achieves what they want without having some form of, you know, mentor or advice giver or somebody that is a couple of steps ahead of them.
Much like I tell everybody that potential does not equal results, the other side of that coin is knowledge doesn't equal results. What we have with the internet and with smartphones is in our hand, we have access to all the knowledge in the world. That doesn't change anything because with knowledge, you're no better off than without knowledge if you aren't taking action. So, you know, the fact that we have knowledge doesn't mean anything because oftentimes there's knowledge out there, but it doesn't come with the how-to. And that's why knowing people, being friends with people who are doing it, they usually tell you or you observe what they're doing, the how-to comes with it. And that's, you know, once you get the how-to, then you have to actually do it. And that's a whole other conversation.
Absolutely. And I think there was another interesting, useful point in there that you made, which is we have a tendency to evaluate our internal perception of ourselves with somebody else's external perception of themselves. So, you know, we see somebody posting stuff on Facebook or LinkedIn or Snapchat or wherever it is that we are of this wonderfully successful life that they've built for themselves. And we're sitting thinking to ourselves, well, I could never do that. I'm nowhere even near that. And right there is a losing battle. You're comparing apples with a screwdriver.
That's right. Not even apples and oranges. It's apples and a screwdriver. I like that, especially with your accent. I like it. That was a good thing.
So tell me, you've been a prolific author. You've written somewhere close to 10, 12 books. Is that right?
12, yeah. 12 books. But some of them are small. So they're not like full-size, like 400-word books.
Right. And anything you learned through that process?
I've learned that writing books is hard. The other thing is that in today's world, not that many people read books. So I wrote my first book like 12 years ago, and I sold like 20,000 copies. People read it.
Right.
I still talk to people who are like, oh, some assembly required. I've still got that on my shelf. I read that. And then the other books I've read – you know, society has changed. People aren't buying as many books. People are getting their information off podcasts and blogs and things. So I found it's a lot of work to write stuff that people don't read.
Yes, the payoff isn't great. So if you could take everything that you've done, the podcast, the speaking, the stuff on Paradox of Potential, and boil it down to two or three real crystal leadership lessons or tips, what would that be?
So it all goes into three buckets. Everything comes into three buckets, and that's your plan, your purpose, and people. So it's a little bit of an alliteration there. Plans, purpose, and people. So your plans are your goals, right? I mean, people shy away from goal setting. I was blown away at New Year's time how many people wrote like anti-goal setting, anti-resolution blog posts on all these big things like, you know, I hate goals, I hate resolutions. And, you know, they got a million clicks, and all these people are like leaving comments going, yes, goals suck. Well, the problem is you don't have a goal. How do you even know what to do every day? When I get on a plane, my pilot has a flight plan. I want him to have a flight plan. If we're taking off from Los Angeles to fly to Honolulu, I've seen a map, and between Los Angeles and Honolulu, there's a lot of blue. There's a lot of ocean. He doesn't have a flight plan. Eventually, he runs out of gas. What are the odds I'm going to sit down in the Honolulu airport? Like, none. So he has a plan. Now, what pilots tell me is you're never on plan because there's storms, there's wind, there's turbulence. So you have a plan, and you get blown off course, and you turn, you go back towards the plan. So having goals and such just keep you on target. And what I tell people who I mentor who are or people who are part of the online coaching program that I have, they could tell you what I'm going to say next because I say it every time I talk to them. If you have a goal, it makes it easy to make the tough decisions because every day we have to make decisions. Do I go to that networking event or not? Do I write this blog post or not? Do I go tell my boss about the problem or not? Well, if you have a goal, all you have to ask yourself is, does doing this action or not doing this action take me closer to the goal or farther from the goal? And so the plan is really important because it keeps you on target and keeps you at least somewhat. We all get blown off course, keeps you somewhat on course. The second one is the purpose. If you don't know why you're in the business you're in, if you don't know why you go to work every day, it's Simon Sinek, of course, is famous for his TED Talk and his books on knowing your why. And he's right. It's that simple. You have to know what motivates you because otherwise it can be depressing. You know, life is hard. I'm over 50 years old. Nobody told me when I was a teenager that at 50, life is hard. But it is.
Right.
If you know your purpose, you can go through the BS that comes along. And then the final bucket is your people. And that is your network. It's the people on your team. It's the people who are advising you. It's your family. It's the Jim Rohn quote of the five people you spend the most time with affects who you are. If you have the right people, then this whole journey gets better. It's more fun. It's easier, and the answers are accessible. So everything I've ever learned, everything I've ever talked about comes down to plans, purpose, and people.
Love it. That's great. Very helpful. And I'm just such a huge proponent of knowing your why. I think, like you said, just everything stems from that. And it's what gets you up in the morning and what gets you through the tough times. So I think that's fantastic. So what are you currently working on? What's next for you? What's exciting you at the minute?
You know, I'm working on the same stuff over and over again. I mean, I would like to continue to speak, you know, 50 to 70 times a year. I would like to continue to put this podcast out twice a week. Sometimes I miss a day, but usually, you know, I think I've missed 12 of them in 3.5 years. So I get it out twice a week most times. You know, I'd like to continue to interview really interesting people, especially more people who own big companies, because, you know, as my focus is growing and changing, I'm working with a lot more larger companies. So I want to get more, a lot more CEOs on the podcast because I want to learn more about what makes them tick. But really, I want to keep doing exactly what I'm doing for the next 10 years.
That's awesome. That's great. So where can we find you? Where is the best place for the listeners to go to check you out?
Everything they'd ever want to know. They can find my podcast. They can find all my social media. They can find a ton of articles and stuff at tomsinger.com. That's TOMSINGER.com.
Awesome. Tomsinger.com. Make sure you go there and check out what Inc. Magazine said was one of the 8 podcasts to listen to in 2018. Am I right in saying that?
That is right. The 8 podcasts entrepreneurs should listen to, but really anybody. I define an entrepreneur as anybody doing something cool. So.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Tom. It has been super fun to talk to you, and you have set the bar very high for any future guests in this program.
That's right. You just tell the guests all you have to do is not make a fool of yourself like Tom did. You're okay.
All right. Look, have a great day, Tom. I really appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.